Hello, good morning, and welcome. It's Friday, the 13th of November, 2020, and we're back with episode 170. That's 170. Before getting started, though, if you're a fan of this podcast, please don't forget to drop me 5 stars on Apple Podcasts and follow me on all social media at Autonomous Hoag. So today, my guest is John Rossent. He is the chairman of newcities.org and also the CEO of Commotion. John also sits on the advisory board of Saudi Arabia's Neom City. It's 150 square mile, that's a 388 square kilometer planned smart city at the northwestern corner of Saudi Arabia. Powered entirely by renewable energy and eschewing conventional transportation methods for autonomous vehicles, both land and air-based alike, this then offers a tantalizing new look into the future of where Saudi Arabia plans to take itself. Anyway, we've got a 40-minute conversation, absolutely fascinating, during which John shares all of his insight on Neom, while touching, of course, on his global experiences from his time at New Cities and Commotion. So, hope you're sitting comfortably. 40 minutes with John Rossent, chairman of newcities.org and CEO of Commotion, begins now.
Hear that? Believe it or not, summer is just around the corner. Luckily, Armor All, America's most trusted auto appearance brand, has what your car needs to get that perfect summer shine. Plus, now through May 31st, we'll give you $5 for every $20 you spend on Armor All products. That means car wash pods, protectant, tire shine, you name it. Find out how to get your $5 rebate at ArmorAll.com. Armor All, less work, more clean. Terms apply.
I mean, about Commotion, what we're, you know, it's in our DNA. I mean, I think two things characterize us. One is that we are very global. I mean, and I think at our big mobility events, whether Commotion LA in Los Angeles or Commotion Miami in the spring in Miami, you know, I think probably about a third to almost a half of the speakers and participants come from overseas. Whether from Asia, Europe, all over Europe, Eastern Europe, Israel, of course, has become a powerhouse of new mobility, as you're aware, Mark. And I think that distinguishes us. The other thing, which I think is we do, I guess, quite well, to be modest, is that we mix public and private quite evenly. So about half the audience, half the speakers come from the public sector, and about half from the private. So, you know, there'll be heads of departments of transportation or ministers of transport, but also startups and OEMs and things like that. I mean, we very much believe that the future of mobility and transportation depend on a very vibrant collaboration between public and private. And I think that those kinds of partnerships are going to just increase in the future. And and I think it's sort of how we see mobility developing. I mean, if you think of cities, and we, you know, we came to mobility from cities. I'm the head of the New Cities Foundation.
I was literally about to ask you, is this how it segued to New Cities? And then, Neom. Yeah. I can't wait to hear more about Neom.
Well, it began with cities. So New Cities Foundation is based in Montreal. We used to be based in Paris. And we look at city building around the world and urban planning and what, and basically the impact of technology on cities. And we were founded around 11 years ago. We have a lot of members ranging from, you know, big companies like Google and Ericsson, et cetera, to Engie in France, to a lot of startups, et cetera. And so when you look at cities, you very quickly begin to look at the mobility and transportation piece. So I think we, you know, quite early on, I mean, one of our first projects about a decade ago was, in fact, with the city of San Jose here in California. And we linked San Jose with Ericsson in Sweden, big telecom company, Waze, which at that point was a startup. It had not been purchased by Google yet for several billion dollars. And it was a one-year project looking at how social media, this is a decade ago, so it was quite early on, how social media could improve commuting and the experience of commuting. And it was a quite an interesting study, a lot of kind of crunching data, et cetera. And about 7 or 8 years ago, a funny thing happened, and that was Google started to invest very massively in driverless mobility and autonomous mobility, as you have very well followed. You know, it began in UberX, which is their moonshot program, and then that obviously over the years morphed into Waymo, which is one of the big AV players. But at the time, Google was kind of just starting out, and they were really interested to understand how autonomous mobility would fit into an urban context. And so, I mean, they, you know, figuratively knocked on the door of new cities and said, you know, we're interested in this. Can you help us, et cetera? And so Google became a member of our foundation around 8 years ago or so. And it was right at the moment that Uber was a small San Francisco startup and was starting to offer services in New York, and it was beginning to be a thing, if you remember those days. Mm-hmm. And I think it was those two things, sort of Google autonomous vehicles plus you know, this new startup called Uber, which could deliver a black car to you in a few minutes, cheaper than a taxi cab in New York, which is where I was living. And I think we realized that something very, very fundamental was beginning to shift in the universe of mobility and transportation that would, you know, between autonomy, ride hailing, connected mobility. We felt that this is something so important for cities, and that cities everywhere around the world would be extremely impacted by this. So we decided to look at it more closely as a foundation, which looks at cities. We had an existential need to stay on top of this development. And so we kind of collectively said to ourselves, why don't we make a conference, put together a conference inviting the, you know, 100 or 150 smartest people in the world who think about the future of urban mobility. And Google loved that idea. And so we had actually a first convening of a conference that we called Cities on the Move, the Future of Urban Mobility. We had the first one in Mountain View at Google. And people, you know, there were about 120 people. They came from Europe, around North America. And it was fascinating because it was one of the first gatherings where people working in autonomy were exchanging with people working in battery electric, with public sector officials, I think. And so it was just a great discussion. And we realized that we had to kind of double down on this. And we had another gathering a year later in London and then in Tokyo. And then we started looking more closely, frankly, at the landscape in Los Angeles in Southern California, because Eric Garcetti, the mayor of Los Angeles, still the mayor of Los Angeles, had published something called the Mobility 2035 Plan, which was a blueprint for future mobility and transportation in Los Angeles. And it was basically a kind of blueprint for a post-car Los Angeles, which is, you know, the very concept is amazing. Yeah. And so we came out here, we talked to Mayor Garcetti, to Salida Reynolds, the remarkable head of the LA Department of Transportation. And it just dawned on me and on us that we should bring this kind of itinerant high-level conference that we were organizing on mobility, that we should bring it to LA and kind of expand it. And that became Commotion LA. And this is the fourth year. And it's expanding. You know, we had, I think, over 2,000 people last year. there'll probably be 2,000 or 3,000 registered participants next week. It's a virtual event, unfortunately, or fortunately, I suppose. But
just to be clear, though, New Cities and Commotion LA are two distinct things, though, right? I mean,
yes. I mean, yes and no. I mean, we say that Commotion LA is an initiative of New Cities Foundation. It's managed separately. I mean, it's Commotion LA is a big undertaking. We didn't want to put the foundation at risk, so it works very, very well. So it's and we collaborate very closely with New Cities Foundation and with many other partners as well, of course.
And you'll excuse me for jumping the gun. My enthusiasm is killing me here. The anticipation, I should say, is so Neon. So where did this come from? Am I even pronouncing it correctly? It's a great
Neon. Yes.
I love the meaning behind the name. So where did this come from?
Yeah, Neon.
And by the way, I should say I'm asking with at least a little bit of context behind this with respect to a thing which I just want to ask you just point blank to kick things off. How similar, or shall we say dissimilar, is this? If you remember, I want to say back around 2010 in Abu Dhabi, the Masdar City project. Are these parallel types of things, or are they somehow quite different?
Completely different. I know both projects very well. I spent a lot of time in the Middle East. And Masdar is and was essentially a real estate development. It's not that big.
It was a test ground, as I recall.
Yeah. Neom is completely different. It is an area in the northwest quadrant of Saudi Arabia, so near the Mediterranean, very near the Israeli border, and across from the Sharm el Sheikh, from the Sinai. It's a vast region. It's the size of Belgium or the size of Israel. So it could be a separate country, and very, very, very sparsely populated, but with sort of pristine coasts, amazing mountains and deserts and archaeological remains. And the government a few years ago of Saudi Arabia decided that this would be a great test case for organizing a real 21st century economy based on 21st century industry and robotics, disconnected from the oil business in the other parts of the country. And it's a very, very kind of dramatic, really statement. And I think it's significant for many reasons. But as an urban specialist and someone who thinks about cities a lot, it's really fascinating because it's the first new city development anywhere in the world that takes into account two important and fundamentally important megatrends. I mean, one, of course, is the energy transition away from fossil fuels, from hydrocarbon energy, to renewable energy, which is, we're beginning to see everywhere, thank God. It's not happening fast enough. But the Saudis wanted to make a statement about that. And NEOM will be, I think, the first development anywhere in the world that actually is not based on oil. It will be completely based on renewable energy from solar and wind.
And this sounds familiar, right? Because this is something that Dubai started doing quite a few years ago. Right. So
Dubai is a very,
with respect to the energy
it's a city that's completely choked by motor cars.
I'm only referring to the movement away from oil as a primary revenue stream.
Well, the thing with Dubai is Dubai, in fact, never had much oil. So one of the reasons they're so successful is that they had to develop, this kind of commercial capabilities and their trading capabilities much earlier.
Right. True. That's a good point. Yep. Yeah, true. Yeah.
But so the other thing that's interesting about NEOM is, one, that it will be almost solely based on renewables. The industry in NEOM will be based on hydrogen, and rather than sort of natural gas or diesel fuel trucks. So that's a first anywhere on planet Earth. The second is that it takes into account very fully the mobility revolution. And so the transportation that is being planned for NEOM doesn't depend at all on internal combustion engines. number one, or indeed privately owned vehicles. So it would be very heavy use of autonomy, shared urban aerial mobility. Because if you have a territory that's so vast, you know, it's sort of 150 miles across, you will need electric vertical takeoff and landing aircraft, et cetera, to move around. So it's not like they're going to build freeways in this vast area. You know, it will be, everything is being done to maintain the kind of pristine quality of the land there, which is great. It's a great commitment.
So this is really more than just a test bed. This is literally like, I don't know, a 21st century Sim City in real life. Build an entirely new city from scratch, bleeding edge technology in every sense of the word, and literally house, yes. What did I read somewhere? 1 million inhabitants potentially?
Yes. But not only that, but it's also, it's all of that, but it's also it will have its own legal system, its own set of laws, its own administration. So it's, I guess, technically part of the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia, but in every other respect, in most respects, it's a kind of independent country. So it's a sort of special.
You kind of anticipated one of my next set of questions. So, okay, that is interesting.
I know what you're going to ask.
I think it's worth at least spending 30 seconds on this. I was doing some Googling on it as well before we jumped on our call just now. Yeah. But I mean, I think a lot of folks are, I mean, obviously, I don't want to get overly political on this podcast, but obviously a lot of folks might be wondering, huh, that's one part super cool, one part somewhat surprising. Obviously, there's been a lot of concern in the world for a certain, shall we say, just to pick on one obvious thing, women's rights in Saudi Arabia, obviously. Yeah. So to the extent that there's this incredibly awesome initiative for NEOM, one might ask, well, that's great, but what about something as fundamental as women's rights? So you're saying it's going to be almost an autonomous, pun not intended,
yes, and I think
sort of subsidiary of sorts.
And the legal system of NEOM, and I've spent quite a lot of time with members of, you know, they have a team of jurists who put that together. I mean, there's legal recognition for absolute equality between men and women in NEOM legislation. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's will be a bit different from, let's say, the surrounding context. But that said, I think many people in the West perhaps don't understand that Saudi Arabia itself is going through quite a, I guess, an awakening or reforms that are absolutely unprecedented. I mean, I'm sure you realize that this is a country where women were forbidden to drive for decades and decades. And so that's no longer the case as of, you know, a couple of years ago.
Which is an unfortunate historic irony. I mean, the same is true for Iran, for instance. I mean, Islam never was such a restrictive religion. It's a modern perversion of the religion that's manifested in the last 100 years. Also, don't want to get into this now, but it sounds like we understand this both. So, okay, good.
So, I mean, I think, you know, the rest of Saudi Arabia is also moving forward pretty quickly. So,
right. Very cool.
Yeah. But I've been on, the government asked me to sit on the advisory board about 2.5 years ago. And it's been a fascinating experience sort of seeing this come to life.
Yeah, no, this sounds really great. So, okay, so you're involved in NEOM in an advisory capacity then.
Yeah.
And then is this something that's in any way, so to what extent is something like New Cities or I guess even Commotion itself, are those organizations able to have any sort of hand in what's happening at NEOM? Or,
Not really, but I mean, I think, you know, given that, it's probably the world's most important new city. Greenfield City. I mean, we have a direct interest at New Cities Foundation and seeing how that, how that goes. And the mobility piece is going to be so important.
I want to dive into that strictly, of course, for obvious reasons. I mean, so you mentioned already the idea for vertical takeoff electric vehicles. Great. I'm imagining it'll be a great test bed for autonomous ground-based vehicles, pod cars, et cetera. I'm assuming then privately owned vehicles will be outright prohibited. Is that the idea?
I mean,
at least extremely limited.
I think pretty limited. You know, okay. I'm not sure if anybody wants to be in the business of prohibiting anything, but it will be very, 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 very difficult, if not impossible, to bring in a privately owned internal combustion engine vehicle into NEOM's territory. So that is pretty cool and significant. And and then of course there are some more major things, such as potentially use of Hyperloop or maglev on a fairly massive scale. So
that would be a great application of that, actually. I saw a somewhat unfair, sarcastic article about Hyperloop testing in Las Vegas and how it was the world's most useless high-speed rail system, carrying two people 500 meters at speeds of around 100 miles per hour. it's a first test.
Last week, yeah, with the Virgin Hyperloop test. Yeah.
But no, you're right, though. I mean, obviously, from what I understand, you said 150 square miles, Neom?
It's about that. Yeah.
It's
like a big, it's a mid-sized U.S. state. Let's put it that way.
Yeah. Which is very cool. All right. So, and I guess the timeline I saw was something in the
there's a big plan called the Vision 2030 plan.
Right.
In Saudi Arabia to effectively, prioritize non-oil industries and 21st century industries, etc. So it's inscribed in that. So I think, over the next 10 years, they would like to see, NEOM begin to be pretty significantly populated. And I think that will, it could happen. I'm not pessimistic. I'm guardedly optimistic about it. In the new city business, there are a lot of countries around the world that build cities from scratch. I mean, we don't do that here in the United States or in Europe because we don't need to. I mean, we're as urbanized as we're ever going to be. But in countries like China and India, Indonesia, that are very rapidly urbanizing, you have to build cities from scratch. So that's happening across China, India, in the Middle East. Very few new cities, new planned cities are successful. I mean, if you think of sort of the usual metrics of what makes a city successful, you kind of overplan in the beginning and, people don't want to move to and live in sort of lifeless sort of urban environments that have, where everything has somehow been thought out by committee, et cetera. So very few of these greenfield cities actually work. So we're hoping, that NEOM will sort of buck that trend and will attract kind of cool knowledge workers from around the world. So,
I mean, at a minimum, it sounds like it'll be a pretty astonishing novelty to visit. I mean, I think one of the things that struck folks about Dubai who would otherwise not have visited, say, any region in the Middle East. I mean, Dubai has become basically a really fun, popular spot for folks to go. They would have otherwise not gone, let's say.
Yeah, and I think that's the promise of NEOM. I mean, I think you add to that the fact that it is, 3 hours, 3.5 hours from Italy or France. I mean, it's kind of sort of more part of the Mediterranean region than it is the Gulf. And so in fact, it has a rather more gentle climate than other parts of Saudi Arabia. It has unbelievably stunning and untouched coral reefs, probably some of the best in the world. There's been zero development ever. So they're completely pristine. So for anybody into, sort of adventure sports or, diving, extreme sports, mountain climbing, it is just amazing there. It is really, really gorgeous part of the world.
Yeah, no, I'm actually couldn't help myself. I zoomed in on Google Maps to check out the scenery there. You're right. It looks pretty stunning just from satellite view.
and then geopolitically, it's, when I go there, I've been there a few times, the kind of central camp at NEOM, and there's not much built yet. We're, 50 miles, maybe not even, from Eilat in Israel. We're right next to Israel. And I think, you know, you've obviously seen what's happened now between Israel and the United Arab Emirates, Bahrain, Sudan. Saudi Arabia, I think, will be next. You know, there's, I think, some really interesting potential business between, you know, a tech powerhouse like Israel and, you know, Saudi Arabia with sort of young, educated population, a lot of financial muscle. There can be some very interesting things happening, I think, with those two countries. And NEOM could be where that happens.
So. Yeah, no, it makes sense. Also, there's a real practical need for this sort of a thing to be built, and let's face it, effectively tested in the process, in that region, not least of which due to climate change anyway, which is going to have a markedly more profound effect on that part of the world anyway.
Quite right. Absolutely, Mark. Totally agree. And remember, you know, going back to the sector that is very dear to your heart and to mine, and that is, you know, mobility and autonomy, et cetera. Remember that the Saudis now have been pretty big players in that field. The, you know, they're massive investors in Uber. They put $1 billion into Lucid Motors, the EV company here in California. You know, they've been making quite interesting bets in new mobility. So, you know, this, I think NEOM will be where a lot of those are kind of tested out.
I mean, it makes sense. If you're starting from scratch, you can effectively develop and deploy level 4 and level 5 autonomous vehicles rather more like public transit than personalized vehicles that are otherwise shared. Yeah. And I think this is a really big point that a lot of folks miss. One of the questions that turns up a lot is, you know, what is the optimal sort of, shall we say, market strategy for autonomous vehicle companies? How are you going to get folks to stop buying and owning and driving their own cars? Never mind car sharing. How do you just get people to embrace autonomous vehicles, right? Because this is not a foregone conclusion. It's a thing we've been studying around the world for quite some time now, actually, on consumer acceptance of AVs. And it's a very difficult thing to get folks to do. And one of the things I've been suggesting for a while is that, you know, autonomous vehicles can't be marketed as a substitute for a privately owned vehicle, but rather as an alternative altogether. I mean, to put it a different way, a car with no steering wheel, or even worse, a car with a steering wheel but no driver, that's a very difficult thing for a person to accept.
Yes.
On the other hand, if you've just got a thing which is like a pod car and it's zipping around on some dedicated road, that's basically a train. That's very easy for you to wrap your head around. So if this place is built like that, which it sounds like it will be, that's going to be a much easier path to consumers, to consumer acceptance.
Yeah, I think you're going to have both. I think you're going to have both. And I, you know, by the way, I think, you know, we could talk for hours on this subject.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think the future of mobility in cities will be truly multimodal. And I think that's the key. So I think we're going to have, you know, a very rich mix of, you know, vehicles with different form factors, whether it's, you know, going from a bicycle to an e-bike to a e-motorcycle to, you know, a hydrogen car, a battery electric car, vans, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, there's a whole new class of vehicles that's coming on the market now, which is essentially kind of gussied up electric golf buggies. I mean, three wheelers, et cetera. I mean, a number of companies are coming out with interesting models. And I think you'll have, you know, a lot of shared mobility of different types, whether it's micromobility, you know, scooters going up to cars and vans, and you'll have various kinds of autonomous services. So it's kind of a rich palette that we can, you know, that we'll choose from. And it's a very different from, you know, how we were brought up and our parents were brought up and the cities in which we lived, in which it was, you know, you had a car, you didn't have a car, period. You know, if you didn't have a car, you'd take a taxi or, you know, public transport. And there wasn't a choice of conveyances as there will be, you know, as there increasingly is in our cities, I think. So, no, I mean, the future is incredibly bright and promising, I think.
You know, it's nice to hear that optimistic view on things, because sometimes you talk to folks and they tend to be a bit more pessimistic. I actually tend to share your optimism. I mean, not least of which, because if for no other reason, I mean, this is a super lucrative future too. I mean, people are going to at least get behind that aspect of it. I mean, this makes such perfectly good sense for Saudi Arabia to get into this space. I mean, of course.
Yeah.
It's interesting. I was so keen to dive in and kind of understand everything you're up to here. I usually love to kick things off understanding about the individual. I mean, what in your background led you down this just amazing path? I mean, how did you even get here?
I don't know how amazing it is, but you know, for quite a few years, I was in the press, and I was working in Europe and the Middle East. I was the Europe editor of Business Week magazine, which was a big weekly before it went downhill and was sold to Bloomberg and it could have been reborn as something else. But it was a great place to work. And so I looked closely at, economies and industries, et cetera. And I think my real passion, though, ever since I was a kid growing up in New York City, and I had, a bunch of urban planners and architects in my immediate family, was really cities and how, I've always a city boy. I lived in New York, and, in Paris, in Rome. I was the bureau chief in Rome, Italy for 10 years, also covering the Middle East. So I just love cities, really, really, really into cities. And I think, starting about 15 or 20 years ago, I had been in charge of physically putting together this big annual event in Switzerland, the World Economic Forum annual meeting in Davos, which is at the end of January, sort of gathering of, the good and the great of this world. And, the big thing back then was Bill Gates and then Mark Zuckerberg. It was the internet, and it was, the digital revolution that was really transforming everything. And then I began to see that and feel that very strongly that the next big thing in a way would be the impact of the digital revolution on cities, that cities would be the next big thing, how we live in cities and how we create smart cities, smart infrastructure, etc. And I really began to think about this a lot 15, 16 years ago. And I felt that the World Economic Forum should refocus on cities, because the majority of the world's population, of course, now lives in cities. And we passed that threshold around 10 years ago. And it was, frankly, I kind of waged a bit of an uphill battle at the World Economic Forum. And I think at the time, no way, cities are not important. I was told, and we don't want mayors here. We want, heads of state and prime ministers. And I thought, well, okay, I'll start thinking about a new platform that is focused on cities and the transformation of cities. And that led me to launch the New Cities Foundation around 11 years ago. And we kind of hit the ground running because we had very support right from the beginning from I think General Electric, Ericsson, and Cisco. Cisco has been a very strong backer of ours through the years. And I think that, what we wanted to look at was really the impact of these digital technologies on cities. And, we were one of the first institutions to really focus on that. At the time, people really weren't talking about smart cities. I mean, now it's sort of a commonplace phrase. But so we were quite early movers in that space. And then, as I said, when you start to look at cities, you very quickly look at how goods and people move around cities. It's very key to, the economic vibrancy of a city, but also how a city is physically laid out. It was starting with, the Romans, and the grid system of modern Western cities derives from the old Roman encampments and the need for kind of straight avenues for the chariots of the legionnaires to, you know, to go down.
And, you know, what you're talking about reminds me of a hilarious thing. One of my partners at Hogan Co. used to say often is that, you know, the Romans have been dealing with traffic jams for 2,000 years.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah, totally. But, you know, what's interesting is we have a real chance now to kind of really rethink what the city is because of the revolution that is happening in mobility. Mm-hmm. You know, if you think about a city like Los Angeles, where I live now, it's, you know, a city that essentially is sort of post-war construct of freeways, you know, connecting, you know, these distant areas of the city. It's all based on the car and how you move around in a car.
But my understanding is that was quite intentional, though, wasn't it? If I'm not mistaken, it wasn't it Frank Lloyd Wright who had actually suggested that the city be intentionally more sprawled out rather than a single focused urban core. Was that not by design?
It was by design to an extent. I mean, you know, what's funny is that you had, you know, a little over 100 years ago, you had probably North America, if not the world's most developed streetcar system here in Los Angeles.
Yeah, that is true. And
you had a huge sort of public, semi-public transit. It's how people got around.
Right.
And that was then sort of cheap gasoline, you know, the move post-war with, you know, GIs coming back to this country. LA was, you know, a big port for the Pacific Theater. So it was warm, et cetera. Everybody bought cars and all of the streetcar lines were kind of gobbled up and closed. And
well, my understanding was that was a pretty concentrated effort by automakers to kind of buy up the
exactly. actual railroad. Yeah, yeah. Well, right? You know, yeah. Smart business. But I think that era is coming to an end.
Well, it's ironic, yeah, because now you guys have a train going back to Santa Monica from downtown. We talk about history repeating itself.
In fact, the Expo line, which I am a great user of, I take my electric bike and bike about 5 or 10 minutes to the metro stop, go on the metro with my bike and head downtown. I love it. And
well, that's good to hear that it works well. Yeah. That's real good. Yeah.
LA in 10 years will, I don't think you'll recognize it. I mean, and I think what's so extraordinary is in 10 years time, for example, we'll have ubiquitous autonomous vehicles going around the city, mostly shared. There'll be, I think, a massive use of new kinds of electric or hydrogen fuel cell powered flying vehicles that will take you on short hops throughout the city. I mean, that is coming, and that will be, there's a whole revolution around that, I believe, that will transform cities, especially cities as spread out as Los Angeles.
What's happening with the underground from downtown to UCLA and Westwood? Is that still happening?
Oh, don't ask me on specifics of lines.
That intrigued me on a personal note. I mean, that just like blew my mind. I remember hearing about this a few years ago, and I thought, wow, if they actually pull that off, that's astonishing.
Well, one of the things, you know, look, you know, voters agreed to a tax increase, you know, whenever it was 4 years ago, Measure M. Yeah. Which is, you know, over the next 10 years or so, will raise $121 billion for public transportation infrastructure in the LA region. So, you know, we also have the Olympics coming, of course, in 2028. Yeah. So we have a real need to kind of lay these new, you know, light rail lines around the city.
Yeah, well, to LA's credit, I mean, I've always been a fan of the speed with which things seem to get built there. I mean, I was still down there when a lot of the 405 widening was happening, and it just blew my mind. It's just such an awesome brute force effort to making things work. Not that widening freeways is the optimal solution, obviously, but just to give a very visual example of that brute force approach to, hey, we're going to do X, Y, and Z, and we're going to get it done quickly. It's pretty astonishing how fast things move. So, and also, I remember the huge streetlight synchronization project that was undertaken.
Exactly.
Okay, so maybe it didn't have quite the end result that was hoped for, but still, it's impressive it even got done in the first place. I mean, that's just mind-blowing.
It is impressive because, you know, it's all the more impressive because Los Angeles,
just how big it is,
probably more than any other urban region in the United States is so complicated from a jurisdictional point of view. You know, you have within LA County, you have 88 different municipalities.
It's true.
Starting with, and you know, LA is, the city of LA is the largest, but it's not the only one. And so you have, you know, 88 municipal administrations to contend with, you know, the county, state. It's a really complicated city to run. And then you have that. You also have the kind of constitutional structure of the city of Los Angeles, which has a kind of weak mayor. So, you know, the real budgets are not in the city. It's more in the county. And so it's, you know, you say you're impressed by the speed at which things are done. In fact, you know, I find that sometimes it's the opposite is true, that there's, you know, things tend to move slowly here. And it's, you know, I certainly would like to see more speed. I'm impressed with a lot of the things that are being done, but I think we do, it's a tough city to get everybody moving in the same direction. I guess that's how everyone.
Yeah, look, that's a really interesting point. I mean, granted, I'm speaking from largely visual, kind of personal anecdotal observations, say compared, for instance, to San Francisco, where I think I'm not alone in agreeing that things tend to move at a snail's pace, but that's for a lot of political molasses, shall we say. I've often joked that for a city as small as SF, it's embarrassing that such relatively trivial projects take so long to get designed, approved, and built. So by that metric, at least, I've been impressed that a place as large and, as you say, complex as LA has managed to do as much as it has. I think that might be a valid statement, perhaps. But nevertheless, no, I see your point. Well, wow, you're right. We could talk about this for hours. And so on that note, how about this? With respect for your time, please know that you're welcome back at any time in the future if you'd like. And as an aside, I would love to introduce you to, as I've mentioned, one of my partners, the transport economist, Martin Adler. I think it'd be really fantastic for you to get acquainted.
Where is he based, Martin?
So he's based in Amsterdam, although I say that. He's actually one time zone further still in Greece for the time being. So you can imagine our, you know, trying to sync up our 10 time zone delta. The poor guy is basically on Pacific time at this point. I know. I just think it'd be super cool for the two of you to connect and have a chat if you'd like. And
I'd love to. Absolutely. Please do connect us.
Yeah. No, I will. Absolutely. Well, cool. John, really, really fantastic conversation. Like I said, I look forward to have you back at some future time. And by all means.
Absolutely, Mark. It's been a delight talking to you. And I look forward to, you know, meeting you in the flesh.
Sounds good. All right. Well, take care.
We'll talk soon.
Yep. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
And that is a wrap for today and indeed this week. Thank you so much for listening. Until next time, have a wonderful weekend. Take care. Bye-bye.